Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. I'm C.A. Brooks, and you are listening to the Friday Morning Show here on 12 Radio, where on Friday mornings we talk about spirituality, and specifically, we look at A Course in Miracles. And if you're listening live today, welcome. Today is November 2nd, 2018, and on today's show, we will be discussing A Course in Miracles with my guest, Susan Dugan. And we had decided that we were going to go back to something that we have been talking about. And I'm trying to remember if I was actually talking about this with Susan or with Bruce or whether it was something I had played at Ken's in the last few months. But, you know, we have been going through two sections, really. We've been going through the manual for teachers and looking at some of the essays in the manual. But we've also been looking at the essays that are in the workbook, you know, in part two, towards the very end of the workbook. There are all those questions, you know, about what is a miracle? What is the world? What is the real world? So today we're going to look at essay five, which is what is the body? Because, you know, this becomes one that just, it's a trigger. It's a trigger all the time, really trying to understand this. And I think walking that fine line between, you know, what I think religious or spiritual people have done forever, which is, do I completely deny the body and just say, I'm a spiritual being and this isn't real and this is an illusion and totally deny the body? Or do we worship the body? You know, the body is my temple and that kind of thing. And of course, I think the answer lies somewhere in between those two extremes. But there's no doubt about it. In my mind, I really do think we're spiritual beings having a physical experience. And you know what? That's quite the challenge. It's quite the curriculum to somehow walk that line and find a way to use the body, find the way to use our material physical existence as a curriculum to understand or to just learn and maybe evolve or to go back home, in the words of A Course in Miracles. So today we are going to look at that essay, What is the Body? And we will also look at the lesson that follows that. So if you've got A Course in Miracles and you're trying to find that, you'll find it between lesson 260 and 261. Because, you know, in that part of the workbook, that's what they do. They have an essay, then they have 10 lessons. An essay and then 10 lessons. So we will also be looking at lesson 261, which is God is my refuge and security. So while you're pulling that out, I'm also going to invite you to meet me and other people over on Facebook in our private group. And if you haven't been there before, you can always find it by going to 12radio.com. That's our website. And when you do that, not only will you find a lot of information, including information about the shows, you'll also find links to all of the archived shows, but you will also find a word that says chat. And when you click that, you'll be redirected over to Facebook where you can join me and Susan and other people. And you can post a question or you can make a comment. And I just want to say thanks to everybody who's already there. It's good to see you, Greg. I don't think I've seen you for a couple of weeks. In fact, I was kind of wondering about you. So hope all is well in your world. And Renee and Quelly, thank you so much for coming and for listening today and for just participating, you know, because this really is a joint effort that we're doing all together. And I also just want to say thanks to Scott Weaver, who's here today, too, as our producer. So let's get on the road here. And Susan, many, many of you know her if you listen to the show because she's on with me once a month. We're talking about A Course in Miracles, and we specifically talk about forgiveness. In fact, Susan has written three books on forgiveness, which you can find on Amazon.com and probably a few other places as well. She is a teacher and a facilitator here in Denver, Colorado. And she's also a freelance writer, and she writes. She's working on a novel, I think, and she likes to write fiction. So welcome, Susan. Thank you for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Well, good. So we're going to talk about that body.
Yeah.
What body?
That problematic body, right?
That body, most of the time I ignore it unless it does something to get my attention.
Right, which it does more and more as we age, right?
Yes.
As we get older. Yes. But the truth is, you know, if we identify, I mean, we all know that bodies seem to be very vulnerable. And at any age, you know, something seemingly random can happen to a body and the body's gone. You
right.
know, the body or the body's, you know, completely debilitated or something. So, and you were talking in your introduction about, you know, the spiritual approaches over time have been, you know, usually to try to deny the body, to kind of rise above the body, or to worship the body, you know, to make the idea that the body is a temple and that we can sort of have embodied spiritual experience that will change the experience of the body. And the course takes a third approach and a radically different approach. And that is to change the purpose of the body, to get us to, you know, from the course's metaphysics, there are two levels to what seems to be happening, and really only one of those levels are we in touch with, and that's the level that we think we're in which we think we're a body in a world of bodies, and from the course's perspective, that level doesn't even exist. But for certainly for you know that we the other level that's true is our reality as an undifferentiated union. Loving union, all loving union as still part of God that is ongoing and knows nothing of this illusory dream of a separated existence and a personal identity that we've made up and, you know, came from a tiny mad idea of wondering what it might like to be, what it might be like to be on our own, you know, to be other than God and to have, to experience individuality. So that's the only reality, that oneness joined as one that is true. But nonetheless, we are dreaming a dream of all of the different scenarios of what it might be like to experience individuality. And of course, because we became very guilty over believing that that tiny mad idea had real consequences, that separation really happened, we also built into the story that we require punishment. And so the whole idea of a body is a defense against the truth. It's we made up a mortal body that is subject to all kinds of assaults, externally, you know, external assaults. And even the internal ones, you know, come from something external like a germ or our DNA or, you know, which has a legacy of its own. And so that we're always, you know, we crafted the idea of a soul being born into a body and then, you know, a body that is vulnerable from the get-go and cannot ever really get all of its needs met and faces all kinds of obstacles in the world and an onslaught of this, of problems, emotional, physical, you know, all kinds of threatening problems that, that can only be temporarily at best solved and, you know, until another problem presents itself. So, and, you know, to up the ante on the punishment that we now believe we deserve for this quote unquote real crime of separation, the body, all bodies are deteriorate. Bodies do what bodies were made up to do. And that is to eventually age and, you know, we're mortal. We age and something has to happen to the body and eventually we die, which proves that the body really existed in the first place in the ego thought system.
Right.
So the course's idea is not to deny the body because that would be very unkind. I mean, we all know that it can be terrifying to experience ourselves as a body. I mean, we you know, horrible things happen to bodies. I mean, look what just happened last week. We have examples all the time. You know, last week we had another shooting and a hate crime in a synagogue. Horrible things at any moment seem prone to happening to bodies. And we all know that in our own lives, with our own loved ones, in our own body, that we've experienced all kinds of problems and continue to, and that it's when our own body or that of our loved one is, you know, in terrible pain and fear because the body, you know, that's all we think we are when we've invested in the ego thought system in the idea of I am this personal self. When we're heavily identified with that, the fear of something happening to that is it feels like annihilation. I mean, what is death? We don't know, right? We make up stories that try to comfort us about what you know. But all of those, I mean, even the idea that there is a some sort of reward awaiting us if we live a good life after death is, you know, what's a good life? That people disagree on what that means. And, you know, we have to, it's always a kind of earning back, you know, trying to atone for the guilt that we all feel of being born in the first place, of you know, being separate from God, of believing we could be separate from God. So the Course's approach is really, you know, not to deny the body, not to worship the body, and you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's not sinful that people do that, but that what will solve the problem ultimately, and what will provide comfort along the way, is forgiveness, like everything else in the Course. And really what that means in this case is changing the purpose of our body to a classroom that is going to teach us to get back to the mind. So really we use the pain of the body, we use our investment in the body, we use the vulnerability and anxiety that comes up when we or a loved one seems to be in pain or threatened by some kind of illness or problem, and it can be emotional too, but you know, whatever it is, that is our invitation, so to speak, to the Holy Spirit, that is the moment in which we need to see that, you know, I have given the purpose of my body, the purpose of guilt, of proving separation real, and punishing me, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Proving that I deserve punishment. And I have another part of my mind that disagrees. And another part of my mind that knows the truth disagrees because it never took that part of, it never took the tiny mad idea of separation seriously. It knows I'm not a body. And it knows that within the loving presence of its own right mind, which is a part of my mind, you know, safety and comfort abide and will always be there for us. And that no matter what's going on with our body, if we can identify with that part of our mind, or at least turn away, at least recognize that my pain, my emotional difficulty is really coming from my identification as a body, my belief that that's all I am. And open to the possibility that I'm wrong about that, and that there is peace and comfort and safety in my mind if I can just get my ego out of the way, if I can just turn away from the ego's threatening scenarios. And I know with my own body, I tend to catastrophize, you know, what all the possible things. Once the ego gets going, it's just, you know, it's on a rant of all the horrible things that can happen. And, you know, when you don't know what a symptom means or something like that, you can really go into a negative spiral with it. But really that should be our invitation. If we want peace, if we want comfort, if we want safety, to step back and recognize that this is a decision I'm making right now. And there is another way to experience this. And you know, when I'm willing to do that, there's the guilt that is underlying my choice to be suffering like this is undone for me, just as it is in a painful relationship with another person, right? And you know, I have a shift. It may not be right away, but there is a shift to peacefulness. I am learning that nothing outside me and nothing that seems to happen to my body really has the power that I'm giving it to cause me the pain that I think it does, and the suffering and lack of, you know, the loss of peace that I'm experiencing. And so, you know, again, we're learning that we're wrong, and that's a happy revelation each time we return to that awareness. So the answer, again, from the Course's perspective, to all of the perils of the body is to use the body to get back to the decision-making mind and choose again for the part of our mind where peace and comfort and safety and freedom from pain abide. You know, and that's the part of our mind that eventually, as we allow the guilt to go, and every time we turn toward that that light and peace and safety in our mind, you know, more and more guilt is undone through that process, and eventually we return to that part of our mind, and we know that we're safe. We know we're not a body, and you know, that's, wouldn't we all want to really know that? Because if, as long as we're identified with a body, it's a perilous world, you know? So I'm going to stop there. I've been talking a while.
Well, you have been, but you know, it's, of course, what I was thinking is, especially as you were just wrapping up, is, but can we ever really get to that point that we, I mean, I think there's probably various levels of identification with the body. Let me put it that way. But it's hard to imagine that there's very many people, and I think there's a few, who ever get to the point where they're not identifying with the body. But I think there are a few. But man, it's just hard to imagine.
Well, I think that the ego would like us to think that it's a hopeless journey, you know, always.
And, yes, the ego.
And within us all, see, that's what my ego says. You know, there's not enough time in the hologram for this to happen, you know. And
right.
I don't have enough time in my own life, certainly, you know, it seems like, to make this happen. And often as we become older, you know, and closer to what bodies do, it becomes more frightening to us. But you know what the Course says, this is not a linear, time is also an illusion, and time, we can give the purpose of time to the ego, or we can give the purpose of time to the Holy Spirit. And, you know, even though time is unreal, again, what purpose are we giving it? If we're giving it the purpose of awakening from the dream of time and space, then, you know, then all it really matters is right now, which teacher am I choosing? And right now I have an opportunity to learn in this moment that I can see peace instead of fear, that I can experience what's going on with my body or with the body of a loved one in a different way that is aligned. You know, once we have that shift to the holy instant, once we have that shift to the perspective of our right mind, we don't have to struggle with this. The knowing, we join that knowing that's always there, and it just kind of melts away in that moment. And you know, that's really the Course is a path in staying present to whatever we're feeling and using it as a way not to deny what we're feeling, but to really, you know, accept and embrace what the fear that we're feeling, but also to recognize that we do have a choice, and that love and comfort of our inner teacher is there no matter what for us, and will never go away. And you know, I'm confused right now because I'm identifying with what I think will keep me safe, but I'm wrong about what's keeping me safe. And what really keeps me safe is the truth of what I am, which is within my mind. And you know, I can also experience that if I can, you know, just for a moment step back and recognize that right now I'm choosing to defend against that. But what I really want is to learn that I'm not a body, you know, mm-hmm. that I am, because that's the only awareness that will really bring me ultimately to peace and comfort and safety, and eventually awaken me again from this dream. That's all really happening right now. It's really not the journey we think it is. It seems like that. And you know, it can be a kind use of time to look at it like that, but it certainly, it's unkind to say we're never going to wake up, you know.
Right.
That's
right.
What the ego wants us to think. You know, this is a hopeless situation. We're damned for all eternity, and that was what we believed in the beginning. That seemed to set the whole thing going, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's really a matter of through every momentary change of mind, kind of disabling our belief in you know, that we require identification with a body to survive, that that's all we are. And, you know, we withdraw our trust in the ego through this process, and through the process indirectly, we're building our trust in the other part of our mind. And eventually that's all that remains, because the you know, we no longer reach anymore. At some point, when the fear is gone, for what we think was a defense, we no longer have a need to do that. And along the way, we spend more time with, you know, right-minded, with our inner teacher's perspective. But it doesn't mean that we don't go back and forth. It is a process, and certainly when we're in the ego, when we are choosing the ego, in my own experience, I have found, because we're more sensitive and aware of that choice, the fear actually sort of increases, because, you know, you're more aware of what you're doing, and thereby the ego is more threatened. And as the Course says, you know, the ego becomes retaliative. The ego fights for its existence. And those rants of the ego can become pretty loud and raucous, right? The raucous shrieks mm-hmm. of the ego, the Course says. So we have to be patient and gentle with ourselves. But, you know, the answer really, from the Course's perspective, is always the same for the body as it is for anything else that we're dealing with. Can I just read the first paragraph here?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I think that will put it in some context. The body is a fence the Son of God imagines he has built to separate parts of his self, his capital S self, so the truth in us, that oneness joined as one with God, from other parts. It is within this fence he thinks he lives, to die as it decays and crumbles. For within this fence he thinks that he is safe from love. Well, because we think we committed a crime against love by running away, by, you know, pushing God away. And now love is the enemy. So we think we built a fence against love. Identifying with his safety, identifying with the fence, with the body, he regards himself as what his safety is. Now I am the body, right? Mm-hmm. How else could he be certain he remains within the body, keeping love outside? Well, you know, everything about my body is different from the unconditional love of God. I don't have unconditional love. I don't have, you know, I have pain. I have all these problems. And it proves that I really exist. You know, I'm a need machine. Love is gone. Right?
Yes. The need machine, that is for sure.
Yeah. Right. And so it's that, you know, that idea that the next paragraph, the body will not stay. Yet this he sees as double safety. For the Son of God's impermanence is proof, so that that we're mortal is proof that his fences work and do the task his mind assigns to them. They punish me for the crime that was real, right? Mm-hmm. I deserve this punishment. We all are walking around secretly believing that we deserve the punishment of God. You know, and we're trying to find scapegoats. We project on other bodies to try to prove our relative innocence. So for if his oneness still remained untouched, who could attack and who could be attacked? Who could be victor? Who could be his prey? Who could be victim? Who the murderer? And if he did not die, what proof, in quotes, is there that God's eternal Son can be destroyed? So, you know, the story that we made up was a story of being born, of all being born as refugees from love into bodies that are programmed to self-destruct eventually, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we take care of the punishment we think we have coming from God, so God doesn't have to come and get us and punish us himself. Yeah.
And, of course, what I find hilarious is that, I mean, and this is just the way of the world. It's how the ego thinks, and we see it demonstrated all the time, which is I make something up, and then I use that very thing as proof that it's right.
Right.
You know, I think they call it the tautological argument, that instead of ever going, but wait a minute, you made this up, you know, mm-hmm. it doesn't prove anything because you just created a system within a system mm-hmm. and then you use the system as proof, you know, right. and it's like, no, that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're not saying exactly that. Well, I think they are actually saying yeah. that here. You know, you make the body up and then you use the body as the proof of what you thought the theory was. Right. See, look at this body. It fails.
Right. Right. Well, we made up the whole thing. We made up the tiny mad idea. We took it seriously in the made up part. Right. It mm-hmm. had real consequences. The consequences were that we had to flee heaven. You know, the mind we're guilty, guilty fugitives. And, you know, we completely dissociate the part of our mind that says, wait a minute, this is fake news, right?
Right.
This didn't happen. And instead we side with the part of our mind that says, no, this is real. And then the ego thought system that's projected out and makes up the whole world that we then follow, you know, these fragments of the one decision-making mind then flee into the world, into bodies, and are, you know, born into bodies that have individual personal lives that, you know, that are unique, right? We made all of it up. But within the ego thought system, it makes perfect sense. But as soon as you step back from the ego thought system back to the mind outside the ego thought system, which is the only reality there is, it's insane what we did. You know, mm-hmm. we have the complete, you know, forever unconditional love of God, endless creativity, all we could ever imagine and want. We already have. We never lost. And that, but we've made up a story that's the enemy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point of the body in the world is to keep us mindless, to keep us so focused on fighting within this, you know, all these fake battles, including the ones in our own body, that we completely forget we have a mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, and something I've been thinking about recently, several different things, but one is that, you know, in a course it somewhere, and I can't even tell you where, it basically says, this is all over. You've already explored right. every single possibility. And I think about that, you know, it's sort of like there are millions of scenarios in which every fork in the road, I tried all the possibilities. I've tried out every single one. And guess what? You actually already did it and it's over. So mm-hmm. whatever you're really seeing in front of you right now is you're just reviewing one of the options that you chose.
Right.
And so, the minute I stop and think of that, I mean, okay, it's already over. This is nothing more than you're sitting down and watching the movie of it. You know, you're sitting down and, or maybe not even sitting, but you're just reviewing one of the possible options. And then, of course, it gets me really thinking, well, then how easy is it to change the option? How easy is it to either review a different tape, review a different movie, or to just quit watching the movies? But there is like a sudden inflow, you know, inflow to me, I guess, of what I consider peace when all of a sudden I go, oh, this is already over. You've already done this. So this urgency, this feeling, yes, you've got to stick with it, but don't forget it's already over. You've already done it. And that leads me to another thing that I guess I think, and I think this very concretely sometimes when I'm working with friends and family and clients, et cetera, and that is how often what I think I hear them saying is there is no answer. There's just no solution to my problem. I've got all these challenges, all these issues, and there is no solution. And once again, in a course, there somewhere, I think in one of the lessons it says, has it ever occurred to you that maybe you just removed yourself from the solution?
Right.
And I've always loved that. So I really should find it and just keep it on my desk. Because I think about that, we so focus on the challenges or the story that we're telling ourselves. You know, this is my story. These are all the facts of my story that we feel like we're separated from an answer. But when we get to the point where we feel like there is no answer, that to me is where kind of desperation and hopelessness sets in. And yet I kind of go right back to that. Has it ever occurred to you, you just separated yourself from the answer? The answer is there. Right. You know, the solution is there. In some ways, we have already lived this out. And so to me, it always feels so different in life when instead of just going, there is no solution, I just go, there is one. I just can't see it right now. I just don't know what it is, but I know there is one.
Right. And of course, from the Course's perspective, the solution, you know, is always the same. I mean, again,
right.
is just going back to the mind. I mean, it does say, the Course does say that the world was over long ago, that we're reviewing mentally what has gone by. So, and Ken always used to say, it's not what's in the script, you know, it's why I keep choosing to watch it.
Right.
And so, you know, again, we try to find solutions in the world and, you know, there's those lessons, you know, what is it? Let me recognize the problem as it is, or, you know, and let me recognize the problem has been solved. Right.
It's already
solved. And the solution is always the same. Forgiveness, the means is always the same. You know, I'm wrong about, there may not, the truth is in the world there's lots of, you know, for a really difficult situation, there may be lots of answers, but none of them are good ones.
Right.
Mm-hmm. None of them really are going to help or they're going to create another problem. So there it's not, you know, I don't think you're being, I think we all feel at points in our lives that, you know, there's no good answer for this. Right. And there's that sense of complete helplessness. And that, I mean, in a way, those points in our lives are really, can be really helpful, because it takes that sort of disillusionment with the answers of the world to be able to really turn openly to the answer of Jesus, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, just like you and I have talked so many times, many, many of us that come to A Course in Miracles, we come kind of crawling on our hands and knees after exploring every single other thing that we think will work. Right. And when we're finally like, none of this works. None of these perfect religions or spiritualities work. And finally, we're like, okay, I give up. I surrender.
Right, right. And really what, you know, what we're, the Course's view of I surrender is really just saying, you know, because there are other paths that also talk about surrendering, but you know, this is not about being rescued in the dream, because we're in that false system, right? We're in the ego thought system that isn't even real. So that would be, if Jesus really gets, when you understand that, you know, if Jesus, Holy Spirit, really comes and starts fudging around with things in the world for us and you know, taking those kinds of specific problems off our hands, what incentive do we have to go back to the mind? You know, that's making the dream real. It's disempowering, from the Course's perspective, the power of the mind, which we've already done. And what we want to do is to go back to the power of the mind outside the dream, that decision-making mind that chose to dream this in the first place. And that's the what we want to get back to. And that's the part of our mind that can say, oh, wait a minute, there's another part of my mind I can turn to, and that will change my experience of whatever's happening, you know? And when I'm really stuck with problems in the world, I mean, it may translate somehow in my dream, you know, because it's my dream, and maybe my mind translates it into some sort of seeming answer in the world, and maybe not. You know, we don't know what's in our own best interest. It might be better for me not to have the answer right now, you know?
Right. Right. So that
part we have to completely just let go of. And to the world, I know, and we don't want to do that. We really don't, and myself included. But you know, the course is saying, no, you can't have a little bit of the world and a little bit of the right mind. It doesn't, they're two separate thought systems. So, and it doesn't mean, and I really want to emphasize this, that we deny the body, that we don't do the normal things of the body, that we don't, you know, I mean, that would be just silly and unkind when we clearly think we're bodies. So we do the normal things, but you can tell, and I know from my own experience, when I'm frantically either resisting treating the body or over-treating the body because I'm so terrified about what's happening with it, you know, either way, I'm making the body very, very real. And really, it's no, you know, I don't need to make a big deal out of it. Okay, maybe something's wrong. I have symptoms. I don't know what they are. They're scaring me a little bit. So make a doctor's appointment. Like, mm-hmm. instead of just, for myself, I just agonize over this whole process so much, you know, and it's just crazy. And so, or, you know, use whatever kind of treatment works for you. Or try a treatment, you know, an alternative treatment if you want. I mean, it doesn't really matter. But if we're putting the body front and center, we're not going to be in peace, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We can just kind of go through the motions of taking care of the body just as you would take, you know, taking care of someone else. I mean, you just, you know, you get dressed in the morning. You do, we all have to take care of the body every day in all kinds of ways. And so, so when we're in fear and panic about what's happening with our body or another one, you know, that those are the times when we really need to step back and say, wait a minute, I must be choosing the ego because the body, if the body is not real and I'm making this front and center, what is the purpose of it that I've given it, you know? And again, the purpose is always to run away from love. This said that very clearly. You know, to prove that separation is real, and to root myself more deeply in a dream of exile from God and punishment deserved, and God doesn't even know about the world. There was no
right.
there's no punishment deserved. You know, no one here deserves the punishment that we see being doled out all the time by bodies. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the elections. Look at all that's going on and the divisiveness of this world. And, you know, we're all doing it. We're all participating in this. And it doesn't matter what side you're on. We're it's coming from the same frightened place within us.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Because we think that our point of view, protecting my body of evidence for the ego thought system, will keep me safe. And we're wrong.
Right. Which is exactly like, what is it, the last paragraph of this? You will identify with what you think will make you safe.
Yes.
Whatever it may be, you will believe that it is one with you. I mean, and just think about how we hang on to our opinions. You know, if you don't agree with me, then you don't like me. I mean, you know, I am my opinion.
Yes.
Your safety lies in truth, not in lies. Love is your safety. Fear does not exist. Identify with love and you are safe. Identify with love and you are home. Identify with love and find yourself. And, you know, that always kind of goes back to me too. You know, we talk about this all the time, but it can't be emphasized enough. And that is, you know, this going back to Jesus or going back to the Holy Spirit, going back to the inner guide and teacher. It's not about having all the answers. It's about not doing it on your own. It's about knowing where you can go back and connect. You know, and to me, I use the analogy of a cell phone. I can get all bent out of shape because my cell phone loses power. But if I know where to plug it in or if I know where to get some auxiliary power, then why would I be upset? And I think that's what I, you know, of course, I feel like I'm training myself to do in any moment is when I'm upset, when I'm, you know, identifying with the body, when I'm identifying with my opinion, identifying with what I think is going to make me safe, just realize, no, this is always going to let you down. You know, the only thing that makes me feel really safe is knowing where I can go reconnect with my higher self.
Yes.
Or with Jesus or whatever. I mean, for me, it really is Jesus. But for a lot of people, I think it's something else.
Right. Well, it's just a symbol of the truth in us, you know, the light and the memory of God in our mind. And we all have it.
Yep.
So, you know, but yes, that's right. It is I love that last paragraph of this section is really beautiful and reassuring. And, you know, if you can let those words for just a moment sort of penetrate the fear that we feel when we're identified as bodies, you know, because it's so, you know, we really are safe and supported. You know, I actually say those words a lot to myself lately, you know, because they to me, are, you know, that's the message of Jesus' Holy Spirit. You know, I've got your back, you're safe, you're supported. We're, you know, the comfort, the love of God is still within you. You are still within the love of God. You can't go away. You can't have destroyed it. And because that's all that we really, you know, believe that is happening is that we destroyed it. We can't. We've talked a lot about lesson 182. We, you know, that frightened child that we all think we are and can't seem to find our way home. We've been cast out of heaven and now we're not welcome back. What a terrifying inner life we all have, you know. And I mean, this is unconscious, but it's as soon as we talk about this kind of stuff, you know, I think people have a little bit of a, you know, a tiny throb of recognition, that lesson says, you know, that's the truth, that's the universal human experience. And wouldn't we want instead to learn that we have a teacher, a presence within us that we can, that, you know, can become our new BFF, you know?
Right.
Because the truth is, it's not going anywhere out there. It's not going anywhere comforting. It never has. It never will, you know? We can watch as many DVDs as we want. But you know, none of them bring us happiness. None of them bring us the love that we think we lack. You know, none of them bring us the innocence that we think we destroyed. And that's really what's at the root of all of this is, you know, we think we're the home of evil, darkness, and sin.
Right.
Certainly the world proves the point, right? As we were saying before, you know, we made up the whole ego thought system that proves we are the home of evil, darkness, and sin. The world is the home of evil, darkness, and sin. We're always trying to make it their problem. But, you know, but still we make it real. And if we're honest with ourselves, even when we make it their problem, we never feel good about ourselves.
Right.
Or it doesn't work, you know. But again, we made up the whole thought system based on a lie, a false premise. And then we believe that the whole thing is real. And it may be logical because it proves that guilt is real, but guilt isn't real. Right?
Right.
So,
well, and
that,
yeah,
you know?
I was kind of thinking as an astrologer, I'm really looking forward to this coming week. Jupiter, which is the planet that is the storyteller, is changing signs, and it only changes signs once a year. And it's going into its home sign of Sagittarius. So it hasn't been there for 12 years, but it gets me right back into that idea of what are the stories that we tell ourselves. And so the other thing I've been thinking about and focusing on this week is for myself and other people, when I hear them talk, how they're telling their story. And so often they're not talking facts, they're talking interpretations. Mm-hmm. And can we take responsibility for our stories and recognize them as such, and even, you know, just kind of stop and laugh and recognize how often we're just weaving the picture together according to what we think the pattern should be or ought to be, but just kind of stopping and realizing we're the storytellers.
Absolutely. And we seem to have our individual stories, but really big story that we're covering up that never happened is the story of believing that we separated from God.
Right.
You know, all stories have their genesis in that story and our defenses and reactions to that story. So really the only, you know, we have to, the only way to take true responsibility for our stories is to go back to the you know, the story is all always, it's wildly different in form, but in content,
yes,
it's always exactly the same.
Yes.
It's always, I exist at God, I really do exist at God's expense, but it's not my fault. Look why, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Look at all these bad guys. Look at all these things that happened to me. Look at the limitations of my body. Look at the limitations of my family. Look at the, you know, cards I was dealt.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, everybody feels that way. Everybody. And it's interesting when people, when you hear me say that, when you hear the Course say that, because it's not my idea, but to get in touch with, to notice your resistance to that, right? Because
mm-hmm.
we all are, wait a minute, you know, not my story, or not
right.
his story, or not the story I just saw in the news. Mm-hmm. We immediately go to exceptions. We immediately start saying some things are this Course can't include everything.
That's right.
Right. And uh-huh. so, you know, just watch how you do that, Ken used to say, and you know, just acknowledge that I must be choosing the ego right now, because that's not true in the right mind. From the right mind's perspective, there's no hierarchy of illusions. An illusion is an illusion is an illusion, you know.
Yep, and one isn't truer than another.
And choosing any illusion, even the ones that look good on the surface, all it does is root us more deeply in the dream, and it's not going to bring us the comfort and peace, and certainly not the love that we're really seeking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Ever. You know, that, and that's again, you know, that this, you have to have had some direct experience of, you know, some disillusionment with the things of your, of, in your life, and some awareness of that internal conflict. You know, for me, it was that sense of feeling unloved and unloving secretly so much of the time that brought me to the Course. You know, that none of the spirituality is, like you were saying earlier. I tried as many as I could find, you know, and they all seem sort of vaguely familiar. So I've probably been watching this video for a long time. You know?
Yeah.
Anytime. Because they did. I was kind of like, oh, yeah, right. Not that one, you know. But the Course was different for me, because I just had a recognition that it would work, and it would at least put me in the right direction, which is back to the mind, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's hard; it's a hard Course. So, that's why you have to sort of have reached that awareness, I think. And it's just a beginning, you know. That's what brought the Course into the world, seemingly into the dream in the first place, was the honest awareness of two people in relationship, Bill Thetford and Helen Schuckman, the scribe, who, you know, Bill raised the question in conflict with Helen in their relationship and in their work environment, that there had to be
a better way.
And
yeah.
You know, or another way, I think, is the direct quote, but yeah, a better way. And don't we all kind of, if we're honest with ourselves, know that's true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's got to be another way.
Really, we're really in trouble if there isn't, you know, I mean, that's despair for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
That there is no better way, that this is it, you know? So anyway, my little pitch for it, but you know, I think that it takes a willingness, an ongoing willingness to recognize that my resistance to learning this, even though I know I came to the Course wanting a better way, the better way that the Course offers, that's, you know, always the same answer, and doesn't have anything to do with this world, I have enormous hidden resistance to that. And so that's why it seems to be a journey. And it will throw me into fear at times. It will seem to throw me into fear at times. But the comfort, you know, the experiences that we have along the way of, you know, in relationships that were so difficult, in which we suddenly, you know, or and gradually over time have a change of heart about the other person and see them as the same frightened child as ourselves. And no longer, you know, can really blame them the way we used to for our distress, what was always our choice for distress. You know, those experiences and those experiences of peace, even when our body is in pain, and you know, a turnaround in how we see other groups of people that we could never, ever, you know, understand their point of view. Those little ahas that we have all the time, if we're really practicing this, we know when we have them that they're worth everything.
Right. Well, and of course, that word purpose, that is such an important concept in A Course in Miracles, is what is the purpose that you're giving to anything in your life? What is the purpose that you're giving to your body? What is the purpose that you're giving to your day?
Right. Do I want to root myself more deeply in this dream that's not making me happy? Or do I want to take another step toward awakening to all that I am? You know, the happiness, the joy, the safety, as we were saying, the security, you know, the boundless love of our true nature that has enough for everybody. You know, I've been doing some, I do a yoga class and I do some, you know, some Tai Chi and different things like that and different approaches of mind-body work. And I can't tell you how much it comes up in kind of universally in all of these paths where the teachers or the practitioner who's leading will say something, you know, will start with some sort of breathing exercise or meditation in which they say something about how comforting, about how we really are, we're all enough. You know, you really are enough. Let yourself know you are enough. Well, why would we all be saying this as an affirmation if we didn't think we were enough?
Right.
You know? I mean, nobody thinks they're enough. And wouldn't we want to learn that we're so much more than enough? So, I mean, this course offers great hope.
It really, yes, it does.
It really does.
Well, and in some ways, I love the simplicity, too, because in very many ways, at any moment, I can just say, does this make me feel good? Does this make me feel empowered? Or does this make me feel scared? Does this make me feel less than? And almost always, you know, a very simple, you know, yes or no kind of thing can then help us redirect where we're going.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
We know very, you know, it isn't that difficult. It can be sneaky. There's, you know, the ego can take on spiritual clothing, and that's
right,
a little tricky. But if we, you know, if you stay attuned to and honest about and paying attention to what you're feeling, you always know, because if you're feeling any conflict of any kind, if you're feeling, Ken used to say, anything but kindness. Complete kindness towards yourself or anyone else in, you know, in your thoughts or in your feelings, then you've chosen the ego. It's not
a crime. That's right.
It's not a sin. You've been mistaken again, and it's based on a fear that you're not in touch with, you know, a fear that is your enemy. And but you're wrong about that, and you have another, you can change the purpose at any moment and put the other teacher in charge as a teacher and learn from that, you know, turn away from the teacher you've chosen to the teacher that always has the answer that you're looking for and will always bring you peace, something, you know, it will come in a form that is peaceful and comforting.
Yes. Susan, I'm realizing we're at the end of the show.
Oh, okay.
It just came. It somehow came so quickly. And so we need to wrap up. So everybody who's in the chat room, thank you so much. And I'm going to go ahead and post Susan's blog, which is www.5 Forays in Forgiveness.com, and that's FORAYS. So ForaysInForgiveness.com. I would also remind you about the wonderful website, which is www.facim.org, which is the foundation for A Course in Miracles. And so everybody, thank you so much for being here. Susan, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
And it's been a great conversation, and I hope you have a great week and a couple of great weeks, actually. This is November. We're celebrating Thanksgiving. And I will talk to you soon. And Scott, thank you so much for being our producer. And I would remind everybody, too, that we've got new programming on Fridays. So please keep it tuned to 1-2 Radio, where there's new programs coming up right after me. KDB is up next. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks and my guest Susan Dugan on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about purpose and the body.